This is Brian Cambria with news for the KVNF listening area, Friday, April 12, 2013. A bill that would allow people who've entered the country illegally to receive a Colorado driver's license passed its first hearing by a state Senate committee on Wednesday. Nathan Heffel has more from the state capitol.
The Senate Judiciary Committee heard testimony in favor of the bill from immigrant rights groups as well as law enforcement in the interfaith community. Peg Ackerman represents county sheriffs of Colorado. She says all drivers would benefit if people who are unlicensed could take a driver's test.
We'll be very pleased to see more drivers on the road that are licensed and insured because people are driving and law enforcement counters them every day.
The bill would create a separate classification of driver's license, clearly labeled with the words non-citizen. Republican Senator Kevin Lundberg of Berthoud was concerned that creating a new classification of license might invite more people in the country illegally to settle in Colorado.
When we put this type of policy in place for somebody who has broken the law and come in here illegally in the first place, I believe it sends a message to other people that it's a good place to come, legally or illegally, and we'll see more of these problems.
The bill passed on a 3-2 party line vote, and despite Republican opposition, Democratic sponsor Senator Jesse Ulibarri of Commerce City believes his bill will gain bipartisan support.
So I've approached my Republican colleagues, I've spoken with Republican leadership, and I think we will secure Republican votes on the floor of the House and of the Senate.
New Mexico, Illinois, and Washington currently allow driver's licenses for those illegally in the country, and Utah grants immigrants a driving permit that can't be used for identification. The bill now heads to the Senate Appropriations Committee. I'm Nathan Heffel at the State Capitol.
The Grand Junction Daily Sentinel reports that as of Monday, four people in Garfield County had been diagnosed with whooping cough, and Garfield County Public Health says several other unconfirmed cases are being investigated. Health officials are urging families to ensure they are up to date on their vaccinations for whooping cough, also known as pertussis, to help stop the spread of an illness that can be fatal, particularly in the case of newborns who are too young to be vaccinated. Non-fatal complications from the disease can include severe illness, hospitalization, pneumonia, seizures, and brain damage. However, older children and adults may have milder symptoms, similar to a common cold with a cough, and can end up spreading a disease they don't know they have. It can be easily transmitted through the air when an infected person breathes, coughs, or sneezes. About 8,000 people in the United States died each year from whooping cough before a vaccine program was implemented in 1991. Today, annual mortality is fewer than 50. Early symptoms of whooping cough include a runny or stuffed-up nose, sneezing, a mild cough, and in the case of infants, even pauses in breathing. Health officials urge vaccinations for children, preteens, pregnant women, and teens and adults who live or work around young children. The Durango Herald reports that a gun shop in Durango has refused to sell firearms to medical marijuana users. Rocky Mountain Pawn and Gun has posted a sign indicating that hippies should use the back door and another that reads, "Federal law prohibits the sale of firearms to medical marijuana cardholders." Manager Chris Burnett said the shop put up the sign after an agent from the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives called the business and said, quote, "Anyone who has a medical marijuana card will not pass a background check," end quote. Burnett said on the application to own or purchase a firearm, which is submitted to the federal government, the applicant is asked whether he or she has ever used illegal drugs, and because marijuana is illegal according to federal law, medical marijuana users must answer yes, meaning they are categorically disqualified from gun ownership. According to the Herald, the ATF did not respond to requests for comment. Colorado law is in conflict with federal law, which criminalizes marijuana in all circumstances and by definition applies to the whole country. While the gun lobby and the marijuana lobby are not intuitive political allies, this has both in uproar. Stuart Prawl, a lawyer and medical marijuana advocate, said Rocky Mountain Pond's dilemma was indicative of the confusing state of the law regarding cannabis. Quoting Prahl, "I don't think anybody should be denied rights because people are taking one medicine as opposed to another medicine, and that's true for parental rights, gun rights, any rights," end quote. He said the unresolved and increasing contradictions between state and federal law regarding marijuana means that, quote, "it's completely confusing to everybody." Who knew that the United States has a helium reserve and that the BLM is opening the first ever helium well in eastern Utah? Marshall Swearingen, an intern at High Country News, discovered these facts recently as he delved into the world of the colorless, odorless, tasteless, non-toxic inert gas. KVNF's Marty Derlin has more.
Helium is used in cryogenics, mostly in MRI scanners. It has other industrial uses as a pressurizing and purge gas, as a protective atmosphere for arc welding, and in growing crystals to make silicon wafers. Of course, it's also used to blow up balloons and make you talk like a chipmunk.
I had never heard of drilling for helium, and I found it sort of funny in a way, actually, that because there's so much controversy about drilling for natural gas and oil, and helium, to me, seemed like a fairly benign material. But as I got more into it, it turned out that there's really a lot of fascinating economics, and that helium overall is a much more complicated subject than I at first thought.
The government's helium reserve north of Amarillo sits over a formation of helium-rich natural gas.
And the government started tapping this formation in the 1920s when it realized the importance of the gas for primarily military applications. And on that site from about 1925 until 1960, it operated several wells that extracted natural gas and refined the helium into a pure form of the gas. And then starting in 1960, there was a renewed emphasis on helium's importance. And that year, the government amended the original helium legislation and poured about $300 million into creating a bigger facility that included a network of pipelines that extended all the way across the Panhandle region into Oklahoma and Kansas. And these private suppliers were selling helium to the government, which was pumping billions of cubic feet of it into this underground pocket in the rock.
By the 1990s, demand for helium by private industry exceeded the demand for government uses, and the reserve seemed obsolete.
In 1996, the Congress passed a Helium Privatization Act, which basically told the BLM, which had recently taken over the facility from the Bureau of Mines, that they needed to sell off the helium within about 10 years to pay off the helium debt. And this was the money that the government had originally borrowed in 1960 to construct the facility. And because of the strange ways in which the government borrows money essentially from itself, from the Treasury, the debt had grown to over $1 billion.
The 1996 Act said that when the helium debt was repaid, the reserve would shut down, and that's set to occur this year. But there's more helium left in the reserve than the government thought. And there's also this worldwide shortage of the gas, with prices that have quadrupled since 2000.
So there's this kind of absurd situation where the reserve is going to shut down, possibly in a matter of months, while still having all of this helium left that it could be selling at a higher price, making taxpayers money and helping to alleviate this shortage. So there are bills in Congress to address this situation right now. And so far, we haven't really been hearing very much about it.
Shale gas, which accounts for most drilling now, contains virtually no helium. The glut created by the boom in fracking has driven down natural gas prices so much that it's not economical to tap the lower-grade pockets that contain helium.
these pockets of natural gas with high concentrations of helium in other places across the West have been viewed primarily as being low-grade pockets of natural gas. So this well that's now about to be tapped in eastern Utah was drilled sometime in the 1940s, but it was capped because it was deemed to contain impure natural gas.
The Utah mine that has just been given the BLM go-ahead is Harley Dome, just north of Interstate 70, a few miles from the Colorado state line. For KVNF News, I'm Marty Derlin.
You can find Marshall Swearingen's article about helium at hcn.org. And finally, this week, the Black Canyon Astronomical Society examines the lunar phases as the moon is illuminated from new to full in our western skies.
The next 2 weeks are a great time to watch the moon's changing phases as it moves across our evening sky. The moon is a rocky sphere about 2,100 miles across. It orbits the Earth every 29 and a half days and shines only from reflected sunlight. So half the moon's surface is always sunlit and half is always dark. From our perspective on Earth, what we see as lunar phases are parts of the sunlit side of the moon as the moon travels around us. When the moon is new or dark, we are seeing the dark side. When the moon is full, we're seeing the entire sunlit half. Over the next 2 weeks, try to look at the moon at the same time each evening, for example, at 8 p.m. in twilight. On April 12th, look to the west and you will see a thin crescent moon below the bright planet Jupiter. If you keep watching the moon as the sky gets dark, you may be able to see faintly the dark part of the lunar disk. This phenomenon is called Earthshine. It's caused by our Earth shining down on the night side of the moon. If you keep watching after twilight ends, the moon will move toward the western horizon due to Earth's rotation, setting at around 9:45 p.m. By 8 p.m. on April 13th, a somewhat fatter lunar crescent has moved eastward, forming a right triangle with Jupiter and the reddish star Aldebaran. On April 14th, the moon stands above Jupiter, and by April 18th, the moon is half illuminated, having reached first quarter phase, meaning that the moon is now one quarter of the way through its orbital cycle. After April 18th, the lit part of the lunar globe continues to expand through gibbous phases. The moon becomes full on April 24th, standing opposite the sun in our sky. You've been listening to Western Slope Skies, produced by members of the Black Canyon Astronomical Society. I'm Mark Trevina.
Thus concludes today's newscast. I'll be gone next week, but Erica will be in. This is Brian Cambria for KVNF News. Good day.